Hey guys, welcome to the Tipsy Archives, the podcast where we have a couple of drinks and gossip about history and the arts. I'm Rachel Liggy, and in this episode I was joined by my friends Louise Prosser and Aaron Redekop as we discuss the demise of the Romanov dynasty. This is a pretty scandalous episode. We've got occult doctors, hemophilia, Queen Victoria, mystic monks, assassination attempts, jewels, and white Russians. So pour yourself a drink and enjoy this episode as we talk about the end of the Romanovs.
So Louise and I topped up our white Russians, and now Erin is also topping up her white Russian. Is your white Russian good now?
It is good.
Okay. Everyone's white Russians are topped up.
We've got our white Russians topped up.
Cool. Because today we are going to talk about the Romanovs.
Dun, dun, dun.
Specifically, the end of the Romanov
dynasty.
So I'm here with Aaron and Louise, and this is the first time we're doing a three-person episode.
It's exciting.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be fun.
We'll try not to talk over each other.
We can do, like, crazy signals that you can't see right now that I'm doing.
No, it'll all work out. So, there are so many famous Romanovs that we're not going to talk about today. Uh-huh. But the House of Romanov ruled mm-hmm. Ruled Russia for over 300 years, from 1613 to 1917, with such rulers as Peter the Great, Ivan the Terrible, Catherine the Great, and many others.
I love Catherine the Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a very interesting, saucy dame.
Mm-hmm. I really liked playing her in Civilization.
I always play her in Civilization, too.
Yeah.
I just do the thing where you just get randomly given one.
Yeah.
Can you choose?
Yeah.
Oh,
I just randomly...
You can choose who you play against, too.
Yeah. I really enjoyed playing Catherine the Great.
Yes.
Napoleon's pretty fun, too.
Mm-hmm. I like Elizabeth.
Elizabeth is always good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But unlike how we wish our civilization games to go, the Romanov dynasty went down in flames.
A lot of them.
Yeah. So, the last Romanov ruler, Nicholas II, had abdicated his role in 1917. And we'll get more into the reasons why. But his family came to a very tragic end when they were being held... in a house in Siberia, I believe.
Yeah.
And on July 17th, 1918, some guards came and took them down to the cellar. This is Nicholas, his wife, Alexandria, and their five children. Or Alexandra, sorry. Their five children, Olga, Tatiana, Maria, Anastasia, and Alexei. And they believed they were going to have their picture taken, I think.
Mm-hmm. It was to prove they were still alive. They were told it was so that the public would know they were still alive.
Yeah.
Well, and they even seated them.
Yeah.
With, like, pillows like and everything, like, they were going to be in that picture.
But no photographer showed up. Instead, about 11 armed guards came into the room. Someone read a statement to Nicholas, explaining that since his family was still fighting against the revolution, that they had decided to execute them, and then shot them all dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the ones that didn't die got bayoneted.
Yeah. I will get into that a little bit later.
And as I said earlier, they even killed the dog.
Family
dog.
Some of their personal secretaries.
I think a lot of the staff.
Nurse.
I think I think maybe only one staff member survived. I don't remember who it was, but I think one survived.
Yes, I think they killed 9 people. There was like 12 guards in total, and 9, and like 9 of the Romanovs plus their other staff that died.
Yeah, it was quite a bloody scene, especially since they initially, like, the guards had a hard time actually shooting the teenage daughters
and
like the kids. It took about, apparently, I read in a book, took 20 minutes.
That's just so morbid.
It doesn't sound like very long, but at the same time,
Well, you're watching your family die. You've already been, like, vitally injured and critically injured.
Yeah.
After that, they did seek out and hunt down some of the other members, the great aunts or the grand dukes.
I think it says 18 members of the family altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, who was this family, and why did this happen?
The House of Romanovs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Nicholas II was the son of Alexander III and Empress Maria, who was a princess of Denmark. And Alexander III was a pretty respected ruler. I mean, things had not been going great in Russia for quite a long time. Russia's history is filled with as many revolutions as French history. But he was a stronger ruler than Nicholas, Alexander III. He didn't start any wars with anyone and had a pretty peaceful rule, actually.
Yeah.
Even though he had some pretty strict reforms. Mm-hmm. But he was just a more of a strong and imposing and, like, kind of brave man that people admired.
He had a really good beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't... He thought that he would just not bother training Nicholas at all until he was 30. Because he didn't think he would die young. So Nicholas just wasn't prepared. Like, he didn't bother preparing him for the role at all. He was pampered. So that was probably one of his major downfalls, that, you know, they just didn't really take care of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that just sounds like a bad idea. Yep. In general, like, if you yeah. know somebody is going to... We talk about that in our Crown podcast mm-hmm. episode, where it's very strange that, like, George didn't prep Elizabeth.
Right? Even mm-hmm. if you don't think you're going to die in your 40s or 50s, like, you could die from an accident at
or
any
assassination.
Moment. Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, so, I mean, Nicholas is just kind of a weak, impressionable guy.
He had a very controlling mother.
Yes.
As well.
He just really kind of allowed people to control him. He was easily swayed by other people's opinions. And when he was a pretty young man, I think they were teenagers when they met, mm-hmm. he met his third cousin, who at the time her name was Alex Victoria Helena Louise Beatrix.
Yeah, because she got, like, all the names. All of her grandmother's names.
So she was Alex, called Alicky, by her family. And he fell very much in love with her, and she was a German princess. And right from the start, his parents, and Queen Victoria, who's her grandmother, uh-huh. They were not really very supportive of the match.
Yeah, mm-hmm. well, there's mm-hmm. a lot of anti-German sentiment in Russia at this
yes.
time.
Which is funny because there's, like, the Romanovs at this point are genetically more German than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Europe is so, like, the royalty in Europe at this point is all connected.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
essentially.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has intermarried and interbred.
Yeah. I think, too, they didn't think that Russia was very useful to them as far as making political connections.
Yeah, they had an alliance with them, but it was a pretty weak, shaky mm-hmm. alliance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think they probably wanted to keep a bit more of a distance,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Also, I know, so Alex, who was to become Alexandra, she was a happy child up until her mother died quite young of mm-hmm. illness. She also had a older brother who died of hemophilia. So at that point she kind of became much more kind of sad and withdrawn and quiet and really shy. And she spent quite a lot of time with Victoria, the Queen mm-hmm. of England, her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And Victoria really just didn't think she was cut out to be the Empress of Russia.
Yeah.
Which she was right.
Yeah.
She wasn't. She just didn't have the personality for it.
No, because she was very reclusive.
Yeah, and very private.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because I know the Russians saw her as cold. And that's a very interesting idea that, like, the Russians saw mm-hmm. her as being too
well,
cold to be their leader.
Well, they had the stereotype that they thought all Germans were like that.
Yeah.
They were cold, they had no feelings, they were mean, they were, yeah. So they just assumed it was because she was German.
Yeah.
And not just because she was so shy.
Yeah.
But Nicholas he wouldn't give up on her. He was so into her. He pursued her, even though his parents did not, like Maria and Alexander, they, you know, for a while said, no, she's not the one, and tried to get him interested in other princesses, and Queen mm-hmm. Victoria tried to get Alex interested in other princes.
Yeah, she wanted him, or her, to marry the future Prince of Wales, or I guess he was the Prince of Wales mm-hmm.
at that time.
And there were so many other people, and actually mm-hmm. the Prince of Wales proposed to her, and she rejected him.
Do you think it's because she was one of Victoria's favorites? She wanted to keep her closer? Because Russia, I mean, remember at that time, Russia was really far away.
Oh, it's so far away.
That probably contributed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she would have loved to have had her there, you know, married to her son. And mm-hmm. I mean, but they were, like, first cousins, or weren't they?
Yeah.
It's a bit close.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think Victoria does not care about that kind of thing.
Oh, no.
No, no. Not at all.
No.
Which is why hemophilia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and her mother, Alice, was Victoria's favorite daughter as well. Mm. They were incredibly close. And so the fact that, because Alice dies on the same day that, like, it was like multiple years after, but on the same day that Prince Albert had died, and
wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a terrible day.
That is a terrible day,
especially for Victoria.
And you can see maybe why she would want to keep Alex closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
especially because Alice was she was quite young.
Yeah,
yeah.
When she passed away because she was caring for people and caught an illness from that.
Yeah, her children had gotten sick with some kind of illness, like, I don't remember, typhoid flu or something, and they all recovered, but right as they recovered, she got ill and died very quickly.
Yeah, and she'd sent some of them away, including Alex, and so Alex had gone to live with Victoria when her mother died.
I had read in preparation for this, I was reading some of this book, The Romanov Sisters, by Helen Rappaport, and she's talking about how Alex was to become, they were both very hands-on mothers, which for royalty is not very common, but they were very involved in their children's lives, and they both wanted to breastfeed, and Victoria was just disgusted by this.
Yes!
She just, like, hated the idea of breastfeeding and thought it was just, like, awful.
Yeah. She hated pretty much anything to do with bodies.
Yeah. And, like, children.
Children, bodies, anything, yeah.
I kind of feel like I'm Victorian sometimes.
she joked that she was going to name one of her cows after Alice because of how much she loved breastfeeding her children.
I remember reading that. I read, it's a book called The Granddaughters of Queen Victoria, and I was reading that in it.
So, in 1894, Alexander III, his health starts to rapidly decline because he has some kind of kidney disease, and he knows that he's probably going to die, and at this point he gives in to Nicky, as they call him, Nicholas, and he says, you know, like, fine, you marry Alex, get her here to Russia quickly so I can give you guys my blessing. And that's what they do. So she comes. She's rejected him a couple times, too, because she doesn't necessarily know if she wants to be the Empress of Russia. And she also is hesitant to give up her Lutheran religion.
Yeah.
Because she would have to convert to Russian Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually something that Nikki's parents tried to set him up with a couple of different princesses who rejected him because they didn't want to become Russian Orthodox and give up their religions either. Because, I mean, that's, at the time, was a huge deal.
It's a huge deal at the time, yeah.
And especially, like, for, you know, families promising their parents, I will never do that. Or, but, you know, Alex, they do decide to get married. And it's definitely a love match. They're just super kind of ridiculously into each other. And she comes there, they get the blessing, she starts her conversion to Russian Orthodox, and Alexander dies in November of 1894 at the age of 49.
I hadn't realized he was that young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they wed a month later, but it was quite a somber affair because they were still in mourning.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, not really a big celebration or anything. And I don't know if the people, even at that point, were super happy with the choice of their future Tsarina. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they didn't really know her at the time, but I think there's a lot, as we were talking about earlier, there's a lot
anti-German.
There's a prejudice there.
Well, and because she was so shy, too, they didn't make a lot of sort of public appearances before, either, before the wedding.
No, and right away, I think they kind of really settled into their family life, which, if they had both had their way, I think would have been a very private, low-key, kind of secluded life in the country kind of thing. They weren't very social. They really just wanted to be together all the time. It was a bit of a clingy mm-hmm. relationship.
Very codependent.
Very codependent, yeah.
That whole family is codependent.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, she's not super happy with the courtly things that are expected of her, so she sets out to do the one thing that everyone, you know, does expect of her, and that's to start having babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, unfortunately for her, for a while, just is one girl mm-hmm. after another.
Mm-hmm. Although, apparently, well, for her, they were really happy that they had a girl first.
The first one, yes.
Yeah, the first one, because they're so private. That when they have their first child, they are saying, you know, I'm really glad that she's a girl because she'll belong to us. I'm paraphrasing.
And there won't
obviously.
Be as much attention paid to her.
Yeah, and if she were a male, she'd belong to the people.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting. It just shows how private they are and mm-hmm. and how much they don't really want to be in the spotlight.
Yeah. Well, and she was very hands-on as well, like her mother was.
Yeah.
She wanted to raise them herself rather than hand them off to nannies and go to galas and balls and political appearances and things.
Yeah, and she decorated their house in a very kind of low-key English mm-hmm. sort of fashion instead of living in the palace with, you know, really kind of the Russian opulence. They lived quite... like, they were still some of the richest people in the world, mm-hmm. but...
they weren't flashy.
They weren't flashy, and they were super religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is funny, you know, at first she didn't want to give up her religion, but when she did eventually convert to Russian Orthodox, she went all in. Like, she was... Mm-hmm. That was it.
She was so obsessed with her husband, too, that she just... Anything that he was in,
he
was so religious that she just made her life all about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if we back up just a little bit here, mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of start to go over some of the numerous things that went wrong for Nicholas. And this was, I think, shortly after they got married when they had their official coronation in Kudinka Field. Mm-hmm. This occasion kind of set the stage for things to immediately be off on the wrong foot. Thousands of people showed up. It was 100,000 people showed up for the coronation. Mm-hmm. And there was the promise of people being able to get food and drink and some kind of souvenirs.
It was, yeah, the one right. I found said, free food, free beer, and souvenir cups.
Yeah.
Souvenir cups? It sounds like they're going to, like, a Canucks game.
But these people are starving, so they're probably like, yeah, food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And beer.
Yeah.
And a free cup.
So, like, somehow this rumor starts spreading through the crowd that they're gonna run out of these things, and people just start stampeding. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they said, too, because where it was being held was, like, it was a field where they did military training, mm-hmm. so the ground was really uneven and muddy, and it wasn't... So when people started running, people were falling, and then people were stepping over them, and it was just, like, a big disaster.
Yeah, almost 1,400 people mm-hmm. were killed.
That's and another insane. 1,300 were injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of people to die during a coronation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to die any day.
Yeah.
But that means your coronation isn't going very well.
But that wasn't even the worst thing that happened, though. What really made people upset was that night there was a big gala ball for the French ambassador, mm-hmm. and they went.
Despite the fact that all of these people had died?
That day. And,
yeah.
And so people were really angry at them for that because they thought, you know, they didn't care that, you know, the common people had been killed and injured and they should have either canceled the gala or stayed home and mourned and
well, apparently that's
stuff.
What Nicholas wanted to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He didn't...
He was
he
pressured
didn't think
to
it
go.
Was appropriate to
yeah.
go. He wanted to stay home and pray.
Mm-hmm.
But his uncles and his mm-hmm. mother said, like, no, you can't snub the French ambassador by not going to this ball. You have to go.
Yeah.
And he, of course, listened to them because he is too weak-willed to stand up for himself.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, a really bad start to his reign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not the best way to start.
So, you know, going further into his reign, I mean, as this is going on, Alexandra is continuing to have daughter after daughter, mm-hmm. which is not helping them.
Yeah.
She is not showing up for very many events because she's just so antisocial.
Yeah.
Which is bad because Maria, his mother, had been so well-liked mm-hmm. and so social and the people loved her. So in comparison to that, it wasn't good.
No.
Well, and she's having a problem accepting Russian culture, mm-hmm. too. And so yeah. she's not embracing it in the way people would like her to. Mm-hmm. Even though she's embraced their religion, she hasn't mm-hmm. embraced their culture.
But also, like, what I noticed is the kids, there's 1895, 1897, 1899, 1901, and 1904. So she was basically always pregnant.
Yeah, and she wasn't and in a those very days, healthy woman.
Yeah, it was not easy being pregnant. So
no,
I'm sure a lot of reasons why she stayed home, too, was she was probably not
oh, for sure.
comfortable going out.
And she had a lot of problems with her, like, sciatica mm-hmm. and different health issues that she had. So she was in pain a lot. Yeah. So that's definitely a big reason she didn't go out. But the people, like, they wanted to see her out and pregnant. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see the babies. Mm-hmm. So this did not endear her to the people at all. And during this period of time, Nicholas is making terrible decisions.
Well, because he hasn't been properly prepared how to be the ruler of a country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his I'm not quite sure what they'd be called, his counselors or mm-hmm. the people around him are telling him that the military needs to be overhauled. It's not in very good shape. Part of this is that one of his uncles is one of the main top military guys, and they say, well, he needs to be replaced, your uncle Sergei. We need to reorganize the military. We need to strengthen it. But he doesn't want to piss his uncle off, so mm-hmm. he doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. And he gets Russia involved in a war with the Japanese, in the Russo-Japanese War, and, you know, over some land disputes. And they're just not prepared for it at mm-hmm. all. The military is way too weak. Mm-hmm. So that just goes quite terribly for them. I think they essentially get their asses kicked and a lot of people die, and
mm-hmm. yeah,
they don't even
cost
have
them a lot of money.
Well, and mm-hmm. they don't pull out when they start to lose either. Mm-hmm.
No, they
so
just
a lot
keep.
Of people are willing to surrender, and yeah. so they start to believe that he has no idea how to be in charge mm-hmm. too.
Seems to be a lot of kind of disillusionment, or I'm.
Well, I feel like he sort because he's so religious too. I feel like he believes
delusional.
Yeah, because really. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like he believes that like. Mm-hmm. God will come in and save us. Yeah. And we are so devout that yeah. there's no way he could abandon us.
And I don't think he had very much, if any, military training.
No.
Because he was quite pampered, so I don't think he
went. He's
not
a good military leader at all.
Yeah. Well, and he doesn't know how to relate to his counselors either, mm-hmm. and so there's no, like, somebody else who may come to power and not have military training would go to their advisors and listen to them, but I can't remember if he doesn't listen or if he's just not surrounded by very good people. But
well, he seems to agree with whoever's talking to him, too.
Yeah.
He's
very wishy-washy because he's so weak.
Yeah. Well, but, and he doesn't know anything.
And he has a lot of his family advising him, too, and they're very old school. And so a lot of the new ideas people are coming up with, he was just like, no, that's not the way they've done it in the past. This is how they said they did it, so we have to do it exactly the same way. Like, he wasn't very willing to sort of innovate at all.
No.
So during the time when the Russo-Japanese War starts, I mean, there was also the Bloody Sunday. We kind of talked mm-hmm. about that a little bit. It was around the same period.
1905.
And that was a workers' revolt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was. The workers were marching to the palace because they wanted better wages, better working conditions, some sort of protection, workers' rights against the factory owners. And they just, I mean, it was a terrible time to be a worker in Russia. You had nothing.
Is there ever a good time to be a worker in Russia?
Well, that's true. It was really terrible. Mm-hmm. So they decided they were going to march to the palace and petition Nicholas for these things. And somehow, I think it was the army got involved. It turned into a massive riot and hundreds of people were killed. And instead of dealing with it, Nicholas fled to their country house and basically hid out till it all blew over, which, again, didn't endear the people to him.
No. No, they are not fans.
No.
I mean, and one thing is, like, he definitely keeps fucking all this stuff mm-hmm. up, but it's not like the people have been happy for a while.
Well, no, they.
I mean, Russia's a huge country, and mm-hmm. I would imagine it's pretty hard to govern that many people, and at this point, a lot of them are just so poor, and there's very little food, and
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's cold. Like, mm-hmm. it's like Russia is a very cold country, and so in the winter, you can't farm, you don't have the access to food. Russia's very physically isolated.
I believe before Nicholas became the ruler, I think it must have been when his father was, it the Crimean War was on, wasn't it, the 1880s?
Yeah, the Crimean War is.
So they are still recovering from being at war.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big hit for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It ends in 1856.
Okay, so maybe his grandfather.
But it's...
Grandfather, father, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a lot. When you think of, like, even just recovering from war in modern times,
yes.
It takes a yeah. long time.
And they didn't come out very well from the Crimean War. They didn't do very well.
No.
Nicholas is also putting forth a lot of really strict religious reforms. Mm-hmm. He's very anti-Semitic, very hard on the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. A lot of them leave the country, flee to the States. Some of them go to Palestine and then, of course, just kind of scatter mm-hmm. all over
through
the place.
Europe,
but
yeah.
it becomes a very intolerable place for them to be. He also is stripping other churches, non-Russian Orthodox churches, of their rights and their ability to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not Russian Orthodox, basically he doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, some of this is really mirroring current
oh,
political.
Yeah, that was yeah. when we were yeah. planning this, when I was like, it feels just... So right,
yeah, you know, a ruler that
yeah.
really has no idea what he's doing, you know.
The people's revolt.
Yes, yes, I'm seeing some similarities as well.
Well, he even gets known because of the Japanese War. He gets the nickname Nicholas the Bloody, too.
Yes.
Or not the Japanese Revolt, but the war. Nicholas the Bloody mm-hmm. is what his political adversaries start calling him.
Yeah, he also alienated the Finns that, you know, I don't have a lot of details on that,
no, but
that
but
comes
I do,
up.
Yeah.
But he,
yeah, there was
know.
A railway strike at some point that he completely mismanaged.
Oh, dear.
Of course. Yeah.
He's just an incompetent guy.
And it kind of makes me wonder, like, did anybody ever tell him? Or were they all too afraid? Like, did anyone say, like...
If he's so easily manipulated, why didn't they manipulate him to make better
to
decisions?
To make better decisions, yeah. Or was everyone just afraid that... he'd get mad at them. I don't know. Like,
or were these everybody else's poor decisions?
Yeah,
and he
exactly.
was just like okay, because he showed a little bit of common
like,
sense.
Yeah, maybe
at the
they
beginning.
Weren't his decisions. Maybe those were he was being manipulated into those. But
yeah, I read another article that basically said like if he had died about 10 years in before he started making the worst decisions,
mm-hmm.
he would have been considered an okay ruler.
Yeah,
like it wouldn't have been so bad. But then he just started doing all
well,
these.
Well, because along came World War I.
Yeah, and then so they got involved
yeah.
in World War I because of their sort of, like, weak, shaky allyship with France
mm-hmm.
and England,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not an expert on this. I don't have a ton of
no.
details on it, but they were, again, in no military position to get involved.
And financially,
yeah.
they were not
no.
able to do it.
They couldn't even feed the soldiers. Soldiers were going into battle without guns.
Yeah.
And, like, even sometimes without, like, proper clothing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
they just...
Yeah.
They yeah. were just... getting slaughtered.
Yeah.
Something like 8 million Russian soldiers
died.
Oh,
it was
died.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, with Alexander being German.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's not gonna help.
That didn't help with their appeal either, and people thought she was spying
mm-hmm.
and sending information back to her German family.
Yeah, she got accused of that a lot.
Yeah.
And he left her in charge, too,
yeah.
because he went out to be part of
He went with the military.
The military,
think,
wherever
yeah.
they happened to be fighting at that
yeah.
point. Left her in charge. She appointed some really stupid ministers.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
yeah.
it just, the whole thing is just a complete clusterfuck.
It
well,
is, yeah. They just listened to the wrong people.
and neither of them are prepared
no,
to, for
at all.
This either,
yeah.
right? Like, she's... Given that she's, like, she was never meant to be the head of Russia, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so... She's
well, and she's
prepared.
Been raised around fairly competent rulers, too, so...
Yeah, her grandmother's one of the most competent
Exactly.
rulers.
We're not
Regardless
expecting.
Of her duty, she just doesn't... She has no interest.
No, she doesn't want to be
She wants
charge.
To be with her babies at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she and, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit before... We started recording,
mm-hmm.
but she did have some humanitarian interests.
Mm-hmm.
She would, from, you know, her own home, put money and interest towards things like training nurses and having better hospitals or helping mothers. So she was trying to
and
sort of
children's
like,
funds and things,
to like help. She had some humanitarian interests, but other than that, she just like really didn't care about any of the actual royal duties. No. And the things that they messed up far overshadow the good that they did. Which, like, there was a little bit of good that they did, but it just doesn't get talked about.
No.
Well, it gets overshadowed.
Well, I mean, and their ending was so sensational and not exciting, but interesting and dramatic. And so that's all people remember them for.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about the things that he did wrong as a ruler, but, like, getting back to their family life. So Alexandra, they have four daughters.
Yeah.
Like we said, Olga, Tatiana. Olga, they're like, yay, we have a daughter. That's great. Second one, okay, another daughter. That's okay.
Yeah. Good.
Third one, I mean, this point, Nicholas is getting depressed.
He's
need to have a male.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, that queen is the worst.
And I'm sure this is helping the public dislike them as well.
Yeah, they're just so angry right now.
Yeah, there. So then they bring in, like, fertility specialists and different kinds of doctors. Then they have a fourth daughter, Anastasia. And at this point, like, things are just so bad.
Yeah.
Like, with their public image.
Because Russia's never had a female ruler. Right?
Well, they had Catherine.
Oh, yeah.
Catherine. No, they did. So what happened with that, actually? And there was a few before that.
Yeah.
Catherine's son, Paul, I believe, the first or the second. I'm not sure why, but he hated his mother.
Okay.
And so when he became ruler after Catherine, who took over from her husband, who was thrown out because he was an idiot. He changed the law so that only the oldest male. So he changed it to, like, male-only primogeniture.
Right.
So that women could no longer rule because he was so pissed off at his mom.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Olga could never rule.
Never.
Yeah. No. Unless they changed it again. Because if you're the ruler, I guess you could.
But you'd have to have popular opinion at that point, and there's no support from them.
Really, it's possible that Nicholas just had no idea that it was possible that he could change it.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, he doesn't really know anything about how to rule and about the family. And, I mean, I don't think he would have even known or even thought of it.
Yeah.
I read maybe in the Romanov sisters book that at one point an English newspaper on the birth of maybe the third or fourth daughter, they said, like, oh, you know, the Russian empress has had another daughter. Congratulations. It's also disappointing for the Russian people. But honestly, guys, like, we've had lots of female rulers and it's worked out well for us, so maybe just get over it.
Yeah.
You know, not in those words, but it was a Russian English newspaper that whoever was writing in England. So, I mean, lots of people have had female rulers, but.
Well, exactly.
Well, like, the British people loved Victoria.
Mm-hmm. And she was she still ruling for part of his rule?
Yeah, because until she's 1911,
I think. 1911, for the majority of his rule.
No, she died in 1901.
I had my ones confused. Oh, okay. There.
Yeah, but so, still, for the first year, little bit,
yeah, 5 years or so, because she definitely met Olga. Mm-hmm. They went on a trip and brought Olga over to meet Victoria. Yeah. After that, Alex was too pregnant and sick all the time to visit.
Right.
But yeah, so.
Oh yeah, because Edward the Seventh is King of England at this time because he actually winds up being a godfather.
Yeah, and then at the sort of demise of the family, it's George because George the Fifth reaches out and offers them asylum very briefly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then changes his mind.
Yeah.
Smart man.
But yeah, so at this point, after four daughters, they're getting very desperate. And so they start also making some really weird friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they meet they go to France for whatever reason. Just Alex and Nikki. And they meet this, like, occult doctor, Dr. Philippe, who is has no medical training, but he
feel like you should have, like, air quotes around doctor when you say it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a self-styled doctor, quote-unquote, who offers treatments in mysterious psychic fluids and astral forces.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And also considers himself some kind of, like, pro at pregnancy and childbirth, and says he can use his magnetic powers to help control the sex of the baby and maybe even change it in the womb. So they became friends with this guy, and they're, like, so into him. They hang out with him for, like, hours and hours, and they just listen to him talk. And
is this the same sort of period in time when the spiritualist movement is really popular?
It's picking up.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I think it may have been happening in other parts of Europe, like, before that. But, yeah.
So there were probably a lot of people. Like, he certainly wasn't the only one offering these kind of bizarre services.
Yeah, it's definitely picking up in Russia. Mm-hmm. Like, the aristocracy's getting really into mysticism and the occult. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, like... I mean, they've already had their four daughters, so it's, like, in the 1910s or so.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a bad decision, but at the time...
It's very popular.
It's very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of their, I think, relatives is also this huge fan of this doctor, and he convinces them to, like, get him a medical license in Russia, which the, medical society doesn't want to do, but he's the czar, so they can't say no. Mm-hmm. So they get him, like, a medical license and, like, a military uniform to be a military doctor, and he comes there and he hangs out with them, and they're doing all this, like, hypnotism and, like, astrotherapy and, like, really weird.
So bizarre.
Super weird stuff.
But I love, too, that Nicholas is like, I'm going to give people medical licenses and make them into doctors even though they have no training, but I won't change the laws so that my daughter can rule.
Oh, and every time a daughter is born, he decides to pardon a bunch of prisoners of goodwill. That's another weird thing that he did.
Because that's going to make people love you more.
Yeah. The people surrounding them try to keep this friendship with this weird doctor a secret.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which, I would.
There's a lot of rumors going on.
And also, given the fact they're very private as well. They don't share a lot of their personal life.
Yeah, they don't have very many friends. So the fact that they're hanging out with this dude all the time is pretty weird. And then Alexander has this weird kind of, I don't know if it's an hysterical pregnancy or something, but she thinks she's pregnant. She stops bleeding, I think, because she's anemic. Mm-hmm. And she thinks, like, she gets to the point where she thinks she's going to give birth. And then this doctor, Dr. Philippe, says, don't let anyone else examine you. Until that finally she, like, thinks she's going to give birth, and then doctors look at her and they're like, you're not pregnant.
Wow.
And, like, it gets that far, and then finally some people are like, you need to get rid of this guy. Who's, like, practicing this, like, hermetic medicine, and, like...
That's weird. He didn't want anyone to...
Directing her embryonic phenomena. Like, it's just, it's super psychobabbly weird.
And the whole, don't let anyone examine you.
Yeah.
Like, is it so that he could stick around, or had he maybe, like, given her something that made her bloat, or, you know, mimicked pregnancy symptoms, or... Like,
what does he think's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Gonna be pregnant for the rest of your life. Like, I don't know. Obviously.
It's all very strange, and it just kind of shows more of their not very good judgment about people, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
And again, just how manipulated, like, how easily manipulated they
were.
Yeah. So, that guy does go away. She recovers from her weird illness or whatever it was. And luckily, eventually, she does get pregnant again.
And Alexei.
She does have a boy, finally. I think he's born a healthy boy. Mm-hmm. And it's actually an easy pregnancy compared to her other ones, which are some of them were really, really hard on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know when they find out, but he out of the five children, he does have hemophilia.
Yeah.
Well, because it's typically only boys. Males. Yeah.
Is it?
So it's carried by the female line, it's manifested.
Have it.
Yeah, because I didn't know. I mean, it's a term that you hear and you think, like, oh, you get cut and you don't stop bleeding. Mm-hmm. But that it's, if it's very serious, like, if you get just small injuries in your body, you just bleed internally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, if I were to hit you,
and
you would bruise and bleed internally.
Yeah, I think it was he's playing or something, and he has a fall, and he ends up with a bruise.
Yeah.
That won't go away or something, I think is how they figure it out.
He has a lot of kind of they call them, like, attacks.
Attacks, yeah.
I feel like that might be one of Victoria's children, actually, that happened. Oh, okay. There's,
well, Leopold
there's,
died.
Yeah.
He was, I think, her youngest
And it's through, it's through Victoria's line that it's Alexandra has it, the carrier.
A number of Victoria's grandsons develop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's the women carry it, and then the men. Grandson.
So Alexandra was the carrier that she got from Victoria.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Alex would have known that it was in her family because her brother died from it when she was a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think they would have quite understood, like, how it's passed along.
Exactly.
Or that, like, women carry it, men don't. But, yeah, she would have known.
Exactly. She probably would have thought, well, I don't have it.
Therefore, my kids will
be fine. Not going to worry about it. Because they wouldn't have understood genetics or any of that stuff then. Yeah.
So, yeah, they finally have this boy, which they've just been absolutely desperate for. And I think, like, a lot of this has really made Alexandra, like, quite obsessive. Mm-hmm. And
she becomes even more religious.
Yeah.
Even though she already was quite extreme.
I mean, there's such a heavy strain on her, like, from the public to have a son and the pressure. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I can't imagine, like, and for any kind of royal or well-born woman for hundreds of years, like, every time you don't have a son, it's your fault.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Oh, it's crazy. But yeah, like, she just doted on him.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody apparently had his christening. His pillow was gold. And it's just ridiculous.
And once they discovered that he was ill, it sort of became even worse, and she wouldn't let him out of her sight. She was obsessive over him. Like, she wouldn't leave and go to any of the events. She wouldn't leave the house. She wouldn't go anywhere without him because she was so worried.
Well, and they didn't want anybody to know that he was ill, so they kept it this, like, state secret, and so she just looked crazy.
Which created even more rumors, because nobody had really seen the baby yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, enter another strange figure at this point, and this is somebody who definitely adds to the weirdness of the family.
Yeah.
So Gregory Rasputin, who is this sort of self-styled holy man and
called himself a mystic monk.
Oh, Rasputin.
He started out as a peasant, and he somehow, I don't really know how he kind of got into their circle. But he befriends them and, you know, says he can cure.
I have a feeling. I want to say it was sort of the same way as the crazy doctor there, Dr. Philippe. I think it was another family member
who
had some experience with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it has something to do with the fact that because Alexei has hemophilia,
he said he could heal him.
And they're so desperate and susceptible to.
And Rasputin apparently is a very hypnotic.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was trained. He was trained in hypnotism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he just, like, really got Alexandra's trust.
Mm-hmm.
And she really believed that he was helping Alexei.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think also, like, there's so much sort of mythology built up around the figure of Rasputin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were so many rumors that he was having affairs with Alexandra and the daughters. Yep.
There was a rumor that he was actually Alexei's father.
Yeah.
And that's why they weren't making any of, like, weren't ever bringing Alexei out very much or having a lot of pictures made public of him because
he might look too much.
He didn't look like Nicholas. He looked like Rasputin.
Yeah.
I mean, from the pictures I saw, he looks a lot like Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they just, because they were so private and they were keeping so many secrets about Alexei, and all of a sudden Rasputin is always there.
Yeah. Well, and apparently he used to go and visit the daughters in their bedchambers.
Well, because, was it Anastasia had back problems?
Yeah.
And so he, of course, I think was involved in trying to heal her as well.
Yeah.
And he was rumored to be part of a weird, like, sect of monks who would, like, self-flagellate themselves and have orgies. And a lot of the sort of, like, rumors around him were about how promiscuous he was and how, like, sexual he was. And, I mean, I think he's definitely one of those figures where it's hard to separate what's rumor, what's
true.
But like some, like he had a daughter that wrote about him, and she definitely said like, no, you know, she kind of put down some of those rumors about if he was, apparently she said he looked into that sect of monks cause he was curious, but he wasn't actually a part of them.
No.
He didn't join them. And he wasn't sleeping with the family.
Yeah. Most likely. And there were even stories. My favorite story I read was there was apparently an evening where he goes to a bar and there's dancing gypsy girls at the bar. And apparently he gets very, very, very drunk and he starts exposing himself to the dancing girls. And when they, after his death, people were sort of investigating him and looking into these situations, you know. And it said, the report written said that there was no proof that he exposed himself. He was not actually drinking, and there were no alarmed gypsy dancing girls. And it was just like, I love that they made the point that the gypsy dancing girls were okay.
Yeah, they were fine.
So a lot of, I mean, he's become such a mythical, like, person.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard to tell what actually happened. And, of course, because the family was so secretive, you know, they didn't document a lot of things with him. Like, there weren't very many pictures with him. I think there was maybe one or two with the family, but not very many.
But it's creepy looking, the ones.
They didn't write anything down. They really kept it very secret.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a bit of a weird-looking dude. So this long, greasy hair and this long beard.
And Alan Rickman played him in a miniseries.
Oh, I do love Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I just keep thinking about the, and we'll kind of touch on this later, but the Anastasia cartoon where he's like, isn't he in it?
Yeah, because he's the villain in it.
Which is odd,
which
because
is, like,
he died.
He wouldn't have been alive at that point.
Yeah.
So,
yes, he died before the family was executed.
Yeah. He gets murdered.
But I guess there's only, he actually, because he does get assassinated, and a lot of people in the family, in the court, like outside of the immediate family, they don't like that he's around. They want to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. They're afraid he has a lot of power, so they want to, you know, there's a couple assassination attempts on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a woman tries to stab him.
Yeah.
And then eventually, I didn't bother writing down all their crazy Russian names, but he does get invited
there
over
group,
to
yeah.
This guy's house for dinner.
Yeah.
Some leader, some military person, or, you know, important guy.
Yeah.
Got all my facts straight here.
this
guy.
And they poison his food.
Yeah.
But he eats some of it and he doesn't die.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy gets super frustrated and, like, just shoots him.
Yeah.
And then apparently that doesn't quite kill him. And then they go and drown him in the river.
Yeah.
Well, it was odd because they said that they tried to pass it off that he got drunk and fell in the river. And I guess when they were investigating this, they found no alcohol in his system and, like, a gunshot.
Yeah.
you know, and a whole bunch of other things that were like, well, wait a second.
I'm adding to the mythology of Rasputin, like, you know, people are like, oh, he can't die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so hard to kill him.
Yeah.
But this was 1916, I believe, that he was finally assassinated.
Yep.
So, World War One is happening at this time.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of back to World War One. All they have all their children. Nicholas goes off and leaves Alexander in charge. And this is when people are really starting to build, I think, the feeling of revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really starting to push for him to abdicate.
Because
they're just so upset.
It's kind of like,
they're over it.
This is it.
Yeah, all these people are dying in World War One, and he holds off for a while because he, like we said, he really has this feeling, like, I'm a Romanov, I'm in charge, like, this is the way it is. He thinks he's untouchable for quite a while.
Yeah.
But it becomes very apparent that, you know, enough people turn on him that he does realize that he does need to abdicate. And that, you know, this is the Bolsheviks are a big part of the revolution. There are other parties as well. But he comes back and he does abdicate. I don't know if you had any more.
Not too much on the information on that.
I didn't. We chose not to get too much into mm-hmm. the political details, just because there are just so many. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to keep a podcast under an hour.
And there were a number of different groups working to sort of get rid of him.
Yeah.
Well, and sort of Lenin is gaining a lot of popularity. Mm-hmm.
Lenin gained a lot of popularity and was banished for a while.
But they want to bring him back.
But then when Nicholas abdicates, he actually tries to pass the title on to his brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his brother doesn't want it.
Smart guy.
Which, given sort of the atmosphere of Russia at the time, smart.
Yeah.
But Lenin sees this now as a time to come back.
Yeah.
And try to get back in power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they take the family kind of under...
they go under house arrest.
House arrest. Yeah,
this is in, like, Petrograd, I want to say.
Is it... Yeah, I think so.
And then, they end up in Siberia.
They end up in Siberia, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at some point, like I mentioned earlier, I believe it's George V... offers the family asylum if they can get over to England. But first of all, they don't think they're in that much danger. Mm-hmm. And second of all, the daughters all have pneumonia or something. Mm-hmm. And they all get sick, measles.
Yeah, there's some reason why they can't travel. Mm-hmm. And of course, Alexei is very ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Alexei can really never travel. Yeah.
So they choose to stay in Siberia. And I don't think that invitation for asylum stays open very long. Mm-hmm.
No.
And, this at this point, like, it's a tough decision, I think, for the Bolsheviks and for Lenin, because they don't necessarily want to assassinate the family, but they don't want to leave anybody living for the opposing side to kind of cling on to as a symbol that the monarchy could live on or oppose them. Yep.
They could come back in, like, 20 years or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So with sort of the threat of the White Army, which would be the other side, opposing the Bolsheviks, they decide that the best thing that they can do is just take out the whole family. Which brings us back to...
where we started.
July 17th.
Yeah, and so one of the reasons that it was hard to kill the daughters... was that they had saved a lot of their family jewels and sewn them into their undergarments.
Yeah.
So it was almost like they were wearing bulletproof vests made of diamonds.
Yeah. Kevlar.
Yeah, it was. If they hadn't had the bayonets, it probably would have saved their lives.
Yeah.
After they executed them, the soldiers kind of freaked out a little bit. Because they didn't actually want people to know.
Yes.
Yeah, they had done
yes.
that. Yes, they looked really bad.
Yeah. So they say they just killed.
They just Nicholas. Say they killed Nicholas. It says it was 4 years until they admitted that they'd killed everybody.
Mm-hmm. And Lenin continued to say that he had no idea as well.
Mm-hmm. They brought their bodies out into the woods, and they, beat them with their rifles, use like sulfuric acid or something.
Yeah.
They made them really unrecognizable. Yeah. And they buried them in two different graves.
Well, and they also, some of them they threw into a well and threw grenades into the well.
Oh my gosh.
As well, because they were trying to like blow it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the burial site wasn't discovered until 1979. It was so well hidden. And I guess no one had written down where it was.
Yeah.
So archaeologists found it. But because this is the middle of the Cold War still, they didn't actually tell anybody where it was until 1989, 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at that point, it just wasn't made public.
I think, 1979, I don't know if they would have had the DNA
technology
at that time.
But they still didn't even... like it was like very hush hush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nothing was found here kind of thing. And then they didn't find the second grave until 2007.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they have confirmed with a lot of testing at this point.
Now they have, yeah.
That compared to, living members of the family, like actually Prince Philip is related to them somehow.
Well, so is Queen Elizabeth.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, he's related to the German.
Russian. Oh, yeah.
Relative. He's more closely related to them.
Yeah, because they're saying that his DNA could prove things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have pretty much proven it was the family.
I mean, that didn't, like we said, the DNA evidence didn't come out until the 90s, 2000s. So after after they were killed, and people didn't know for a while, and then they did know, that all the rumors come out that somehow Anastasia had survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And lots of women came forward to claim that they were Anastasia, one in particular.
Yep. Anna Anderson.
Yes.
Which, I mean, this story, you read how they discovered her, and it's just like, how did you even believe that? Because she was institutionalized in a mental hospital.
Yeah.
And it was another patient in the mental hospital that said, she's Anastasia.
Yeah.
And they believed them.
Because somebody did.
Somebody did. Because Anna Anderson had refused to reveal who she was, her name. They called her Fraulein Unbekannt. I probably completely mispronounced that, but Miss Unknown, because she refused to tell anybody her name, where she was from. So I don't know if it was a case of amnesia or if she just was refusing to tell anybody who she was. Mm. And then this other patient said, well, she's got a Russian accent, and she's got all these scars, and she's got all these marks on her body that she's been abused and beaten up, and so she's Anastasia. She told me she was Anastasia.
When it turns out she's just, like, a Polish factory worker.
Something like that, yeah. She was absolutely not. And but the thing was, they had so many family members of the Romanovs came forward and went and visited with her and looked at pictures, did comparison, did all this stuff, and said, nope. She is not Anastasia. She is not anywhere near related to us. And people still believed, to the point where Americans sent money, brought her over to America, and paid for her for the rest of her life to live in the States.
Yeah.
Quite a few, like, high society women in the States took her under their wing and all this stuff, even though relatives had said,
there's absolutely no way.
No way.
So she's a con artist.
Well, I think she was more mentally ill.
Yes, than a con artist.
Yeah, because she was in an institution when...
She was quick enough to go with it.
She might have also been convinced.
Because
when you think about the fact that she was in an institution at this time,
it might have been very easy to convince her.
Because she claimed until the day she died that she was Anastasia.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, like, she was getting free room and board. She was getting taken to all these events. She was giving clothing. She was giving... At some point you go, well, I'm not going to give this up.
Yeah.
It's easy to lie about a family that was really private.
Exactly. And there were not very many pictures of them around.
Well, apparently she knew some things, but I don't know if that... how that would have worked. It also could have been that she was just making that stuff up.
Yeah.
But...
And they did eventually do DNA testing. They had saved some sort of tissue from when she had surgery somewhere. As she was older, they'd saved it. And they eventually, when they did have the technology to do DNA testing, and they had the remains from the grave, so this would have been about the 2000s that they sort of did it. Because I remember hearing about it when they did it, and she was not Anastasia.
Yeah.
And there were a few other women, none as sort of well-known as Anna Anderson, but there were quite a few that came forward, and... Of course, it's spawned a million movies and books and stories. It's a nice thought. I can see why people sort of grabbed onto it.
It's a
very romantic story. And hopeful, too, that, you know, this entire family didn't get slaughtered and their, you know, somebody made it out. So I can see why people really sort of grabbed onto it.
A couple people did make it out. Nicholas's mother, Maria.
Yeah.
She got out on an English battleship. And she took with her her Fabergé eggs.
Yes.
Very important.
There's actually one thing that kind of got me interested in the Romanovs recently was I was watching this series on Netflix, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is a fun show.
Oh, yeah, that sounds interesting.
And it talks all about how Fabergé, he started making all these eggs as presents for Empress Maria, and then when Alexander died, he was making them every year for Alexandra and Maria, and that there's these 50 imperial Romanov eggs.
Mm-hmm. And there was only something like 65 or 70 eggs made in total.
There's not that many, and they're absolutely, like...
They're beautiful.
Beautiful, like, diamonds, rubies, and, there's, I think, 50 have survived. I think there's 50 in total. 43 have survived, and there's still 7 that are completely missing. They may have been destroyed, but she got out with, definitely 1, but possibly up to 5
oh,
that
wow.
she might have kept, like, quiet about.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an interesting detail. And then after the Bolsheviks came in and took over Fabergé's workshop, they took a lot of his stuff and they sold off a lot of goods like art and jewels and things like that. So a lot of...
They destroyed a lot, too.
A lot of Russian artwork and, you know, artifacts were destroyed or sold off for money. And so now it's, I think it's a pretty important thing to some people who are very into Russian culture to get some of those things back. Some of the eggs are now in museums in Moscow.
Right.
There was a some billionaire in the last 20 years who made it a very important mission to get as many eggs back, and he spent like $100 million or something, like buying as many as he could on the market and getting them back to Moscow. And Maria got out, and I mean, like, and to know that the rest of your family, right? That's pretty awful.
Your son, your grandchildren.
And there was, you know, a couple aunts or something that because
they
also
did,
survived.
They did go out and try and find as many family members as they could and assassinate them.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't want anybody the throne.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of... it's a very sensational ending to a long dynasty of rulers. So it's understandable that people would be so interested in the story.
Yeah.
And this year is 99 years since it happened. So
next year will be 100.
Next year will be 100 years. And that was the end of Imperial Russia before it became Soviet Russia. And, you know, for a number of decades.
Mm-hmm. I've been rewatching season 5 of Downton Abbey, and so it's got all of the Russians in it that have had to flee and are now refugees.
Yeah, I just watched that too.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's the story of the end of the Romanovs. Mm-hmm. It's a bloody end.
It is.
But Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2 is not about them.
No.
It's about Northern Ireland.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny, when I was Googling Bloody Sunday, and it came up as the Northern Ireland one, and I was like, wait, that didn't have 1973 or something. I'm like, no, wait, wrong one.
Yeah.
Wrong Bloody Sunday.
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty depressing topic. Maybe we should go dance to some disco music.
Rah-rah Rasputin?
Yeah.
Lover of the Russian Queen.
Thanks for joining me, guys. I know our white Russians are pretty...
Yeah, I know.
But anyway... Cheers.
Cheers.
Because naturally, the end of a Russian dynasty and disco go hand in hand. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at Tipsy Archives. Or if you want to send us an email, our email is thetipsyarchives@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.